You're listening to
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sci-Fi Dig Show 218. This week, I'm going to talk about the Fringe episode, The Arrival. I'll get more into that when I do the breakdown, but it's a big episode for Fringe. And speaking of Fringe, I don't spend a lot of time over on Sci-Fi's Blaster news website. I'm doing air quotes for news because, you know, I mean, it's a decent site, but for a company that has this much money, I expect a little bit more from my news site. But I go over there every once in a while. But they have a snippet of an interview that the cast and crew of Fringe did for TV Guide. And what I really liked about it was that they're talking about some of their, one of their least favorite moments, which was the beginning of season 4. And, you know, I don't want to give too much away for those people that haven't seen Fringe, but I kind of enjoyed it because season 4 had a very different beginning. Things were a little shaken up. Some of the characters weren't present in the beginning of the season. And I really enjoyed John Noble's comments, which were that, you know, he doesn't think that Walter would function well without Peter there and without some of the other characters there. So he makes some comments about that. And what I liked about it was you're really showing how much effort and time he puts into the character of Walter, how that character has come a long way and really, really has been brought to life by him. And like I said, I'm just a huge John Noble fan for this series, and the fact that he hasn't gotten a Golden Globe or an Emmy or any other freaking award every year is ridiculous. But anyway, you might want to go over and check that out, Fringe fans. It's kind of interesting. I'm trying to find a link over to TV Guide for the whole article, and it might be something you have to buy. It looks, I don't know, I'm over here now, and I can't tell if it's all here or not, but it's just something to go and investigate if you would like to do that. Anyway, I just wanted to mention it because sometimes this stuff goes away. Sometimes it's, you know, I don't know, sometimes it goes behind a paywall. I never know what goes on, but I'm just trying to point it out there to you. Anyway, of course, the other big news for us Sci-Fi fans is that Sci-Fi decided not to renew Alphas for a third season. Now, I, of course, am a little annoyed because I kind of like this show, but it's not. I understand that if it's not pulling in the ratings and they can't make the money, I understand that you have to go the show has to be canceled, you know. But my problem, my disappointment with Sci-Fi comes in the fact that this is kind of like our go-to network for these shows. Sci-Fi's whole way of telling stories on our network is serializing a story and making it, you know, last. You have a season-long story. You always have an arc. I'm trying to think of any shows, any hour-long drama type shows they've done in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years that has not had like an arcing style of storytelling to it. And since that's how they're telling stories and that's how we're watching the shows, all I ask is for a better ending, something that to kind of tie things up to let us know what's going to happen. And you mean to tell me they don't have enough money to do one more 2-hour season, you know, series finale kind of thing. And that's all I'm looking for, right? Now, I went out of my way to try to really push this show on a lot of people saying, you know, give it a chance. Because even I was surprised. The first 4 or 5 episodes of season 1, I was kind of bored. And it really, really started to ramp up at the end. And I really got kind of hooked on it. I was surprised at how much I was enjoying it. And it was one of those shows where, you know, I could kind of take it or leave it, or I would kind of do a little bit of something else while I was watching it, like play on my phone or something like that, you know. And it got to like the last 4 or 5 episodes of the first season, and I found myself kind of sitting there, you know, watching it and having my phone in my hand, but never actually looking at my phone, just being kind of like stuck along. And when I'm reaching for the remote control to hit the commercial skip button, you know, so I can get to the next scene, and I'm just on it as soon as the commercial hits, that's one of the ways I know that I'm into a show. And I really was getting there. I was really getting into the show. And so season 2 rolled around, and I wasn't happy with the way season 2 began. I don't want to give anything away, but it's kind of like they ignored some of the big things that happened in season 1. I mean, they bring it back up later on, but I thought there'd be much more fallout than what we saw. But anyway, you know, so I really kind of grew on me, and I was kind of pushing on some people. And so I was talking to Rod, who's been on the show several times, and he finally was watching it, and he emailed me last week, and he was like, hey, you know, I'm all caught up, you know, and we can do a show about it if you want. And I'm like, yeah, man, we're going to do a show about this, you know. And I was like taking some notes, trying to figure out a day we can get together and everything, you know. And then it was 3 days later, and they canceled it. So I was just kind of irritated on a lot of different levels about that. But anyway, it doesn't mean you shouldn't. It's not like a super cliffhanger, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't watch the show, because it really is a good solid show. We're not talking like cliffhanger, like, you know, the end of the 4400, which was a super cliffhanger. I didn't renew. I'm still bitter about that, you know, or some shows like that where there's just a major cliffhanger and they never get around to, you know, surface something like that. It's not that big of a deal, but it would be nice to be able to wrap it up. And considering this is a show that was driven really by, I mean, you know, obviously you had a story, but you had, this is one of the shows that was more character, character driven than story driven. And so, you know, there's no reason that they couldn't have made a final kind of send off for a reasonable amount of money. Now, I know that sci-fi, you know, that they're, everybody's trying, you know, little things, you know, and I know that they've had this online, you know, webisode thing, and are now bringing it to the big screen, and or not to the big screen, to the small screen, and making a big deal about it. And maybe that's one of the things needed more room. What I don't need is any more haunted crap on sci-fi. That's just my opinion. I know some people like that, okay? And I'm not knocking that. But in the scheme of things, how many freaking reality series do we need on there? I mean, people complained about wrestling coming to sci-fi. Come on, man. These reality series, there's how many? You go to sci-fi's website, and that's all they do is they're pushing all their reality series. And that's what irritates me, because I know that they're cheap to make and all that. But you had a great show like Alphas, and, you know, now that's going to be moving along, but we're going to get all this other stuff, and it just makes me unhappy. Anyway, not my network, but, you know, I don't have to, I watch the shows that I watch, and that's all I can do, right? The Fringe season finale will be coming up, or by the time you hear this, it'll probably be over. Yeah, by the time this one comes out, it'll be over. I cannot wait. I'm really excited for the season finale of Fringe, or the series finale of Fringe. As long as it's, you know, it's solid, you know, I'll and it makes sense and it goes with the way things have been going. I don't care what happens. I just, you know, I'm just kind of excited, and you know, I know we're going to have a lot of action and things going on, so I can't wait for that. Anyway, let's talk about some upcoming DVD releases. These are going to be for January 22nd. We are going to get not a whole lot of science fiction, but we are going to get Death Race 3 Inferno. And I find it kind of funny that, you know, the Death Race 2 and 3 are just kind of cheesy, you know, direct-to-DVD kind of movies. It's very fitting for that franchise. We have Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning. Now, I know for a lot of people, this might not be a big deal, and they might not care. But, you know, I've always been very intrigued by the Universal Soldier franchise. I use that term loosely because we had one good solid movie, and the other movies have just been okay. And they've tried so hard to get a franchise off the ground, and they just have not been able to do it. And I'm not sure why. I don't know if it's because we've done the story, you know, kind of the same story over and over, right? You know, and it's a story we have all seen. I'm not exactly sure why it can't get off the ground. I mean, the other movies were okay, but they just weren't, you know, I don't know. I guess, like, you know, when you have a film like Universal Soldier, the first one, right? As a sci-fi fan, you've seen this story a million times. And so, you know, in that scheme of things, you're kind of watching it for the action and the characters and seeing the fight scenes and stuff like that. Then once you see that, do you need to see that again and again and again? you know, no, I think that's why a lot of these things fail, or why a lot of these things get transferred to a television series and work well, because they take the entire season to unfold what we saw, you know, 45 minutes in the movie. And so I think it's a lot of reasons some of these things work. Anyway, I will be renting that, and as soon as it's, I mean, I don't know if they're going to do this whole embargo on the rental things is just kind of annoying me. And the irony is, of the whole thing, if I'm using that word correctly, is that, you know, they're trying to do this to try to pump up sales, and it has been working because sales have been up. But, you know, I work and know a lot of younger people, and they have a lot more free time on their hands than I do. And, you know, I'll mention a movie and I'll be like, yeah, I have that. Yeah, I have that. And they're not buying it. Okay. They're getting it through other means. And it's just like, so how effective is this? You know, cause like I might not download it myself, but I have no qualms about somebody giving me a disc with it on there. You know, and so it's just like, how effective is this, you know, this whole embargo thing? You know, I really think about a new film coming out before I purchase it. You know, it's got to be something that I want to see right now. And I did that with Dread because I wanted to see it when it was in the theater and I missed it. And it's been kind of on my mind. And the DVD cost me $20 and I don't regret it. I think it's fantastic. I got a digital copy as well. And, it was a great film. Really loved it. Have no regrets about the purchase, but anything that's new, I really don't buy it right away. You know, the only thing that I do that with, the only thing I pre-order is all the DC animated stuff, the direct to DVD stuff. I usually pre-order that a little in advance and get it, you know, when it comes out, you know. And other than that, I just wait till the price goes down. I'm still waiting for John Carter to hit like $8. And when it does, I'll be buying that. You know, I just, I think that a lot of listeners know that I have a little bit of a DVD buying habit. Okay. I'm trying to curb it. There's been a lot of really good sales around Christmas. I can have a long dry spell after that, but Christmas time is really rough for me because there's so many, before the new year, there's always a ton of good sales. But anyway, I was in the grocery store the other day and they had the Three Amigos on Blu-ray for $7. And I remember when that came out, it was like a $30 disc because of all the special features and because it actually has a little pamphlet in there where they're talking to the actors and things like that. And although the Three Amigos is not like one of my favorite films, I hadn't seen it. And, you know, by the time I don't even know where I could rent it from Netflix, I guess. But I mean, you can't like rent it. I don't have a local video store anymore. I mean, we have red boxes everywhere. They don't have the older stuff. So it's just kind of a waiting game, you know? So I'm not exactly sure, you know, what the, you know, for me, I just watch some of the older stuff. And then if it's something is really good that I know that I'll watch multiple times, then I'll purchase it. You know, John Carter's going to be that. I can't, it was actually on the free preview, this weekend, and I did not watch it. I did not even record it because I knew that it was something that I was going to buy because I know that it's something I'll watch multiple times. And so I'm like, well, I'm not going to watch it because I've been kind of building up waiting for the rewatch to hits the right price. So I know I might have to go in there 6 or 7 months, but I know it's coming, you know? Anyhow, we had a free, I don't know if I mentioned this because I've recorded this part 4 times now because I keep getting phone calls, but we have a free preview weekend here where we had all the DirecTV movie stations for the whole weekend. And so I always go through and I find a bunch of movies I want to watch and record them. You know, some things I've seen before, but I'm just like, it's free, so I might as well get it now and, you know, grab stuff. You know, whether I watched it or not, I mean, I have movies on there from last year that I haven't watched. Just not enough hours in a day for all the stuff that I want. I actually enjoyed the little hiatus over the Christmas time when I could just get caught up on Fringe. I've watched almost the entire first 2 seasons of Fringe, and I'm going to back off a little bit now because I find myself having to go back and rewatch the episodes in their entirety when I'm pulling the audio and just taking too much time to do that. So I've kind of backed off on that a little bit. Anyway, so I kind of enjoyed that little break. You know, now we're getting back into it. We have some, you know, we have some new shows coming up, or old shows returning, like Supernatural and stuff like that. And you know what? It occurs to me that I could just stop watching Supernatural right now and probably be okay with it. But I'm so worried something really good is going to happen and I'm going to miss it because it's just like, man, I'm into this season and it's just been eh. And I'm just waiting for something great to happen. And I figured the day that I say, okay, I'm done with this, that's when it's going to happen. So, but as is now, Supernatural is one of those shows that's on while I'm doing stuff on my computer because it has become that boring to me in a lot of ways. I mean, there's a lot of good things too, but the overall story, not very good. Anyway, Scarecrow and Mrs. King season 4 is going to be available, and that seems to be about all that I see here that... I did want to mention Hansel and Gretel, Warriors of Witchcraft is going to be available. And, you know, obviously I love these movies that come out and do like a take on whatever new movie's coming out. Hansel and Gretel movie coming out. So they have, and so the cover is Hands on Gretel, and she's in the front. She's holding a ball of fire, you know. And I think we've seen some scenes like that. But of course, it gets one star. And I, you know, it's one of those things where I love these really bad movies when they try to do what they got to do here, and you know, try to make their money off the name. Try to confuse. Sometimes you can confuse people and they buy the wrong thing. But yeah, even the review here, it says, "Do not buy this. It is not the blockbuster, but a mock of the title. Waste of money and time." And I just want to say, well, of course it's not the blockbuster because it hasn't been released yet. So how can it be? People are just not very smart. Anyway, I love checking out these cheesy movies. I mean, Asylum Films was real good for that. And they had a lot of, some of them, I mean, they had some good moments in some of their films, but they were just really bad, just really cheesy films. Anyway, I think it's pretty much all I have for this episode. I mean, other than the breakdown, I don't really have any good news or anything. I haven't really come across any fantastic things that I feel I need to share with, sci-fi dig community. And you know, I did want to tell a real quick story. I don't know how quick it's going to be because it's me, but you know, I've the way I've been doing the Fringe episodes is like I always have. I'm pulling the audio, you know, from the DVDs, but I have them on Blu-ray, so it was very complicated because, well, I don't have a Blu-ray player for my computer, so I got an external Blu-ray drive. Because my DVD drive in here is shut anyway, so I got an external Blu-ray drive, and I can watch the Blu-rays when I need to pull the audio and all that. You know, I can do that no problem. But the thing that's funny is that, you know, it's kind of a pain in the butt because if you jump around, you watch something, you're like, okay, well, you know, I'm watching a scene, and I'm like, okay, well, I wanted to start recording this 10 seconds before here and go for like maybe 2 minutes, you know, and maybe I cut it short and I got to start it again or something like that. So I got to jump around a lot. A lot of times it takes a couple seconds for the disc, the seek time and all that. And so I'm trying to find the quickest possible way to do it, to make it all work. So I decided the best thing to do would be able to just rip the episodes and then just make a, you know, they don't have to be in HD or anything. I can kind of compress them down as long as I got decent audio. So just to have a reference so I know where to pull it, right? Well, I've been using free software. There's a couple of free different programs. Make MKV, which works fantastic. And what it does is it pulls the entire block, the four-episode block on season one or four episodes. Season two, I think, is six episodes to a disc. But it pulls that entire block. And then from there, I convert that to MPEG-4 using free software and pick a decent compression. And then I split them up so that I have all the episodes. And then it's real easy for me to reference and take screenshots and all that stuff. Everything's been working fine. No problems whatsoever. And then I realized that Make MKV, even though it's somewhat, it's shareware software, but it also has, it's freeware software with shareware elements built in. So the problem is that the Blu-ray Ripper is actually something that costs money. I was not aware of that. And so my time limit was up and everyone had $50. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to pay $50 just yet until I look around. Don't get me wrong, the software works good. You know, I have no qualms, but $50 is a lot of money for software. Considering I can buy an operating system for $80, that's, you know, a lot of money. Anyway, so I started looking around, and I have just been buried in reviews of Blu-ray rippers. I finally found one that was decent and was less than $50, but it's actually going to save me time because now I only have to do one thing. It'll actually just pull the episodes straight, convert them to MPEG-4. Right off the bat, and so I can control the compression. So if I want to make them small, I can do that, and I still get to be able to do what I want to do as far as, you know, pulling the audio and stuff. And the idea here is for me to kind of like, you know, I'm still pulling the audio from season one, but I want to start ripping season two. So when I get there, I don't have a bunch of work in front of me. I can kind of do this, let my computer do the work while I'm at work and things like that, you know. And, you know, it's kind of funny, although it's a lot of work to do these, I do kind of enjoy it. You know, I do kind of enjoy the planning and you know, trying to put any downtime I have to the best use I can in order to get things together. But anyway, if anybody's running Mac and wants a Blu-ray Ripper and wants to know some information about it, hey, I'm your guy because I've researched a bunch of them. There's probably got to be 50 of them out there. I can probably tell you right now, 35 of them look exactly alike. They just have a different interface. I mean, as far as like a different skin, but like the preview window's in the same place. All the icons are pretty much the same. It's kind of funny that they're obviously using the same, you know, engine, and the same, you know, underpinnings, but it just, it's kind of funny how much alike they look. Some have more things to tweak than others. For me, it kind of comes down to price, and that's what I went with. The one I found actually was on sale, so I was pretty happy with that. Of course, then I tried to use a gift Visa card to buy it, and that wouldn't work because they don't bill in America and blah, 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 blah. Big pain in my butt. But anyway, I finally did get it. Been playing with it a little bit. That's what I've been doing this week. And okay, going to talk about Friends now. This week, we're going to be talking about the season one episode, The Arrival. This is episode 4. And the basic overview here is there's a strange cylinder that is somehow connected to the observers, the bald men. And this was one of the, this thing keeps popping up throughout the series. But in this particular episode, it is kind of wreaking havoc. And this was the episode where I realized, because during the episode, they explained that the observers had been at a lot of different catastrophes and during a lot of their cases and things like that. And this was when I started watching for the observers during the episodes after I saw this particular episode. Now, obviously, I missed a couple of different times, you know, as I've gone over in the first three episodes. There have been several moments where I have missed the observers and I pointed them out. In this episode, it's not hard to spot them since it starts out with seeing an observer. But I do want to tell you before we get started here of the, you know, what the glyphs mean for this particular episode. The glyphs spell out rogue, and that's going to play out a little bit more because, you know, again, these podcasts are spoiler podcasts, so keep that in mind. I try not to spoil too far ahead, but I want to point it out now because I'm going to forget to come back at this. Now, rogue, I think in this episode, I think everybody assumes, you know, if you've only seen it to this episode, that it's referring to Walter, and as we'll see, Walter goes a little bit rogue. That's what I think. The very first time you watch this episode, that's what it seems like. But in fact, I think it has to do with the observer, and it'll play out a little bit further along. If you guys are not looking at Fringipedia.net when you're watching these episodes or after the episodes, you're doing yourself a disservice. You know, I've been looking around for various websites to help me with the breakdowns, because there is so much information in each episode. But, you know, I found a half a dozen different sites, and I use all the information from all of them. Some are better than others. Some cover certain things better than others. But Fringipedia does a fantastic overview. It has, it has like script breakdowns for a lot of the episodes as well, which is kind of nice. But one of the things that I like is that when they use regular music, not the orchestra music, like the soundtrack music, but regular music in the episodes, if you go to Fringipedia and scroll down to the bottom, it has iTunes links, but it also has the name of the song so you can buy them from anywhere else. It just seems easier to embed iTunes links. I wish it was just as easy to embed little Amazon MP3 links, and maybe it is. I don't know. But anyway, you have the ability to go there and purchase those songs if you like what you hear. I wish every show did it this simply, but a lot of them do not. Also, it has a lot of other information as well. One of the things that, you know, it reminds me a lot of the Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5, a little bit better put together, and a lot more information than that. But it has all the critical stuff. You might have to look around a little bit for it, but it's all there. And again, it has a picture of the beacon, which is what they're calling the cylinder. You know, I told you how there's always like clues to the next episode in the previous episode. And some of them are easy. Some of them are very difficult. And again, I'm looking at this, the photo that they have or the screen cap. And I have no idea how somebody caught this. I mean, my God, you had to comb this thing I don't know. You had to just spend a lot of time staring at this, because I don't know how this just jumped out, especially considering that when the first season of Fringe came out and it was on television, let alone on DVD, there wasn't a lot of high def versions available, and so that would make it even tougher. But if you look in the episode The Ghost Network, when the rogue agent comes in, there is a little itty bitty tiny microscopic picture on the wall, and it has a photo of the beacon on it. And that was, you know, I looked at a lot of these hints, and that was one of the toughest ones. I wish somebody would explain how they came across that, because they must really have been watching this. Now, I have to say that doing the breakdowns, you know, I'm watching the episodes and trying to, usually when I do a breakdown, depending on what I'm doing and how in-depth it is, a lot of times when I'm watching it on television, I'll take timestamp notes so that I know where I need to pull audio from. With Fringe, it's difficult, because here's what happens, is I think I need to take audio from certain segments, and then I watch four episodes in the future, and I realize that there was a bit of audio I should have captured, because it would, it would better explain things. And so what ends up happening is that I usually never go back once I'm so far ahead. I usually don't go back once I pull audio. But so I sit down and I watch the episode again. And what happens is I'm like, well, I'll just watch the whole thing again and then pull the audio that way. Well, you know, that really takes a lot of time. But at the same point in time, I'm really getting an in-depth look at this show. And when I'm sure as time goes on, and I've watched all these episodes at that point three times a piece, I'm going to get, when somebody points something out to me, I'm going to be like, oh man, I can't believe I missed that. And I'm going to have to go back and watch it again. But I keep getting sucked in. And really, when you're not watching the overall story, when you are just focusing on dialogue between two or three characters, it really becomes apparent that John Noble should have an Emmy for this show. Okay. No, it really becomes apparent just how good these actors are. But John Noble should have an Emmy for this show. I mean, he should have an Emmy for every single season. The fact that he doesn't is a crime, a crime, a crime. I'm not going to stop whining about it. I'm a little bitter about it. He's amazing. Absolutely fantastic. And there's a bit in this show. I'll wait till I get the audio clip. The audio clip does not do it justice, because you've got to see his facial expression during it. I'm going to get to that, but oh my God, the fact that he doesn't have an Emmy, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all. It just does not make any sense. So yes, I'm still going to be putting things on Twitter about how he should have an Emmy. And I want everybody that follows me on Twitter, listens to the show, to retweet it, because he should have an Emmy, for God's sake. He should have a whole collection of them. He should have a box of them. Okay. For this show. He's fantastic. Absolutely outstanding. Anyway, first clip.
Can I get you some coffee?
Roast beef sandwich on a roll. Meat raw as possible. Room temperature water. No ice.
Gotcha.
Do you have jalapenos?
I think he does.
11 of those, please. On the side.
11. You got it.
Now, the first clip was of the observer having lunch in a diner. And when you watch him make the sandwich, you did watch this just to watch him make the sandwich, where he has the roast beef and he opens up, takes the lid off the pepper shaker and pours all of the pepper on there. And then a bunch of hot sauce. And then he scoops up all of the peppers and puts them on there and bites into it. And, you know, although the first couple times I saw the scene, I was kind of intrigued every time. Upon my third watching, I thought, I wonder how many times they had to do that, because he's pretty deft at scooping all those peppers on there. I just thought it was kind of interesting. Anyway, the next clip is of Peter and Walter, and it's nighttime and they're trying to sleep again. Remember, Walter has some issues sleeping. This episode has a lot of friction between the two characters, and I really liked it. I really like the fact that, you know, Peter has a lot of agitation and he addresses that. He explains it to Livia, you know, but anyway, I have a lot of clips like that. But again, some great acting between both of these people. And I'm just going to play the clip now.
with 150 grams of sucrose. Maintain at 70 degrees Fahrenheit for 120 hours. 30 milliliters at 80 degrees.
What formula are you rattling off at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Formula for root beer.
Root beer. That's what's so important you couldn't stop yourself from broadcasting.
Haven't had it for ages. I thought I might make some in the lab tomorrow. Where are you going?
It occurs to me it might be easier to sleep in the tub.
A root beer float. Delicious.
Next time, would you please drain the tub?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Now, the next clip is Peter going to the FBI offices, and they're giving him a hard time about getting in. He doesn't have his credentials yet, and he's very frustrated with things. And he explains to Olivia, not only is he kind of frustrated with his father, and, you know, obviously Walter's probably a hard man to live with, but he's frustrated with his own situation.
I know how to get there.
I need you to slow down.
Her office is right up here. I've been there before.
Sir, you don't have clearance to walk here unescorted.
Peter.
We need to talk. Is that okay with you? Do I have clearance to talk to her?
It's okay. I got it. Come with me. Where's your father?
Walter is at the hotel. But don't worry, your agents are standing guard. Not that it matters, because the man is unconscious. He was awake till 5 in the morning, reciting the chemical compositions of his favorite beverages to me. That was right after he finished lecturing me on how I'd squandered my above-average intellect and my substantial education, all while he was standing there naked, because he prefers the breeze.
Well, your living arrangements are temporary. We're finding you an apartment, so that...
Olivia, don't bother. I wanted to help. I felt bad. I still feel bad about what happened to you. But the truth is, you don't need me here.
That isn't the truth.
It is. Things are happening here. Strange things that need investigating that connect somehow to the insane work that Walter was doing way back when. But he's the one with the answers. You need him. I'm just a babysitter.
Peter, you decipher what he says. Things that other people can't even follow.
No, not anymore. Anybody can do that. There's nothing special about me.
You're his son.
That's not the only thing. I don't do well staying in one place. You know that. This isn't a job for me.
If you leave, so does he.
Really? You're telling me that if the federal government wants to get Walter Bishop out of a mental institution, they can't do that without the consent of his son?
It's your father. He's made it very clear that if you leave, he won't cooperate with our investigations.
I don't believe it.
He would rather go back to St. Clair's than work here without you. He said that more than once.
Was he wearing clothes at the time?
Now, this, I need to point out that this episode, although we have this story, it's kind of a simple story. And what's more important is that the impact that this story is going to have on the overall Friends universe. There's a lot of information here. Not only do we find out about the observers, but we have this cylinder and we have a reveal at the end that I'm not going to get to until we get to the end. So I want to give the overall story, which is the fact that you have the bald man, the observer, eating lunch in a diner with as much pepper as, I don't know, that's a lot of pepper. And, you know, there's a huge catastrophe, right? There's like an underground explosion. And the crane falls down. It's a big deal. It's a big mess. And it's all because of this cylinder. Now, the cylinder is going to play a part, in several more episodes. It's been a while since I watched this during the first run. I do not remember everything. And that's one of the reasons I've always wanted to do a rewatch of Fringe. I'm going to come back to that topic in a minute. Let's put a pin in it. All right. So anyway, so what happens during this episode is that there's a cylinder, and basically there's somebody trying to get the cylinder, and the observer seems to be kind of following the cylinder, but there is somebody else who's killing people trying to get to the cylinder and take the cylinder. We don't know why. When Walter sees the cylinder, he becomes a little bit agitated, and he becomes a little bit obsessed, and you're never sure why, and it doesn't play out until the very end, when we start to have an understanding of why he's doing what he's doing. But overall, the episode, you know, this is one of those episodes that for all the more story that there is in the initial episode, all the tendrils that are put in place that reach into every other aspect of Fringe. I could have just played the entire episode and done some commentary during the off points because I didn't think I was going to have that many audio clips for this. I ended up with 16 clips because there's just so much information. And also because there's some great acting, I didn't want to miss out on that. I do want to point out one thing, and again, I'm not trying to be negative about this, but you know, I go on about some of the episodes has some very outstanding music. I mean, music that I think is fantastic. Now, music, obviously, you know, everybody has different tastes of what they want. I'm not a huge soundtrack guy. Sometimes, you know, I hear a song on a soundtrack and it's pretty darn amazing. And I want to own a soundtrack. I know a lot of people have soundtracks to everything out there. They like this kind of music. I like my music to have words and preferably guitars. But as far as the Fringe music goes, it has always worked really well with the episodes. But the way that Fringe music works in the episodes, it's not like a Babylon 5, okay, where the music is so tightly tied into the scene. With Fringe, it's a little bit different. You have music in the background during, you know, leading up to the commercial breaks. So you have, the way I do it when they're showing you the glyphs, the music's playing over that. It's definitely used more. I think it's used more for setting the mood and the tone than normal. And in this particular episode, the music was good, but there was nothing outstanding about the music, you know. And the only reason I'm pointing that out, the only reason I'm making a point of saying that is I know a lot of times I watch an episode and the music, I think, lends so much to the episode that I get real excited about it. And then, you know, I think people think that, well, you know, maybe he just likes all this music. I'm not really a fan of all the music for all the episodes. Just sometimes when it is put together and everything meshes, it really, all the different aspects really make the episode outstanding. In this episode, because there's so much information, I don't think that the music really lent to the action or things like that because of the way it was. Anyway, I have no idea why I'm telling you that because I'm not trying to be negative in any way. I'm just trying to point out that, see, I don't like music in every single episode. I'm not like, you know, so when I say, wow, the music of this episode is freaking outstanding, I really mean that. Anyway, the next clip is of them going to the site, and it starts out kind of funny. I try to trim these down a little bit, but you know, Walter gets out. He's like, "Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning to everybody." You know, and then they get down to under the building where they have this cylinder, and then they have this exchange. And this is where we see Walter starting to get agitated about things.
Morning.
Yesterday there was an explosion at a construction site in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. A crane collapsed, left 3 dead, 2 dozen injured. The public was told that it was a gas main explosion, which technically is the truth. It's what caused the explosion I want you to see. We had it transported here late last night. We've got NSA and CDC gathering data. But Dr. Bishop, I wanted you to see this as soon as possible.
What is it?
It's why you're here. We don't know.
It just fell from the sky.
It came from underground. The thing blasted through an unused subway tunnel into a gas main.
Underground.
Came to rest right on the surface, as if someone had carefully placed it there.
Solid iridium.
We think so, yes.
Sonic vibrations.
At 2 megahertz and then again at 4.
This thing is vibrating.
Dr. Bishop, do you have an idea what this may be?
An idea, yes.
Do you feel like sharing?
No. It's too early.
This isn't the first time one of these has shown up. 1987, at Quantico. Colonel Jacobson was in charge of the investigation.
Henry Jacobson.
I spoke to him myself this morning. He's expecting your visit. Said he's looking forward to seeing you again.
What do you want to do?
What kind of man would take off on you the minute a can of magic space soup appears out of nowhere?
Who says it came from space?
It's a joke, Walter.
Oh?
Thank you for staying.
This is the last one, Olivia. Then I'm gone.
Okay.
Hmm.
We need to get this back to the lab.
We can't risk transferring this to the university. We'd rather you stay.
If you require my perspicacity such as it exists, then there are certain fundamental requirements, not the least of which is access to my equipment, my lab.
In the next clip, Olivia goes to see Henry Jacobson, and they're apparently they're old friends, and he's going, since he has already seen one of these cylinders, she's trying to find as much information as she can about the cylinder and what it all, you know, what it's all about.
Well, well, well.
I was hoping I'd have an excuse to see you again.
It's good to see you.
It's been more than a year since she died. It's still difficult.
I suppose it always will be. Jessica took care of the house. Well, she took care of everything. I apologize for what has to be horrible coffee.
No, it's delicious.
I know you lost someone too. My condolences. It's not easy losing a partner. I know you and Agent Scott were close.
What can you tell me about Quantico? 1987?
Master Sergeant Stuart Malik. He was at his post at the Marine base on the night of June 22nd. His job was to watch the motion sensors, perimeter security, to ensure that there was no breach at the base. Except on that night, the sensors went nuts. What he found was this. A metallic cylinder, 24 inches tall, 12 inches in diameter. He assumed it fell from the sky, that perhaps it was a piece of a satellite. Except it wasn't. Stranger still, although it seemed to be a solid piece of hard metal, it was vibrating.
At 2 megahertz. Then again at 4.
There's another.
Where is this one? Still at Quantico?
I was called in to investigate. We determined it was transmitting something, a signal that we couldn't decode. 48 hours after we found it, there was an explosion unlike anything I'd ever seen. And went through the floor to the basement below. It exploded down and was gone. I'll give you my files, whatever you need. But this was a weird one, Olivia. And if it's happening again, as a friend, I'd ask you to stay as far away from this thing as you can.
Now, remember how I talked about tendrils and, you know, how there's a lot of seeds being planted in this episode that are overreaching through multiple seasons on some things, and some things maybe it's just a seasonal thing. And in this case, the next one is the fact that Olivia, the next clip I have, is Olivia is going to start experiencing seeing or interacting in a lot of ways with her former partner, John Scott. And this is going to play out over several episodes, and there's a great moment further on in season one, and I'll get to that. And there's also a moment at the end of this season, which I really hated, and I'll get to that too. It's one of the big negatives about this episode. You know, I don't have a lot of negatives about Fringe, but at the time I saw the episode, the ending was outstanding, and then the way that they act like it never happened really kind of annoyed me. Anyway, let me play the clip.
Agent Dunham. Hello? Hello?
Olivia?
Hello?
Olivia.
Joe?
Dispatch.
This is Agent Dunham. 7-18-622-79. I need a call traced from my cell. It just came in.
Please hold. We have no record of any
Okay, thank you.
I'm just going to kind of, that clip's going to play out in later episodes, but it was important for me to play that clip. Doesn't really pertain to this particular episode, but it's important to note that there's going to be other things that happen to Olivia to make her either think, or maybe she is communicating or seeing, you know, John Scott. And, you know, we're going to come back to that. The next clip is Walter is examining the cylinder. And this is where Olivia realizes that she has been seeing these observers in other instances.
The precision with which this object was constructed is inspiring. Down to the molecular bonds.
I sure hope that a gigantic metallic suppository is not the pinnacle of human achievement. What is it? Let me ask you a question. If I tried reverse psychology, like if I just said to you right now, Walter, don't tell me what that is, would that work?
Many years ago, I worked on Project Thor. Department of Defense wanted a subterranean torpedo, a missile which could, in theory, be shot from anywhere in the world, through the Earth's core, and hit its target on the other side.
I know for a fact that that is ridiculous.
Open your mind, son, or someone may open it for you.
Even that doesn't make any sense.
The cylinder could be any number of things, none of which I am prepared to discuss.
Great. Well, I am glad I stuck around for this.
I don't believe it.
What?
Look. It's one of the photos from Jacobson's file. Him, remember? The bald guy.
No, who is he?
That's the point.
Olivia, you're starting to sound like Walter.
There are many things that I'm not good at. Too many, but one thing I can do that I've always been able to do. That game, concentration, memory, connecting things, putting them together. See? 2 weeks ago at the hospital. That's him.
No way.
Now, in the next clip, Olivia takes this information to Broyles, and she's going to be in for a little bit of a surprise.
Still photographed from the crime scene at Quantico, 1987. Look, he was there. Look at this. Less than 2 weeks ago at the hospital in Quincy. It's the same guy. And he looks the same. And he was there with us. What?
Come with me. Excuse us, please. Took us a year to spot you. You did it in 3 weeks.
Who the hell is this guy?
That is one excellent question.
You've run him through every database.
Of course.
And there's nothing on him. Nothing at all.
No positive ID. We've recorded him at over 36 scenes, all of which relate to the pattern.
How? Why? What is he doing?
What it looks like he's doing is watching, observing, which is why we refer to him as the observer. But what he wants and why he's there, we don't know.
And he was there the other day, in New York, at the construction site?
This is Broyles. When did it happen?
Now, the phone call that Broyles gets is that the, I've already forgotten his name. But anyway, the Henry Jacobson, the person that that Olivia Dunham had talked to about the cylinder, somebody came to his house and, you know, attacked him. And what we see is happening is that he's hooking these guys up, or these people that he's capturing, up to a machine. And it's this weird machine where they get things up their nose and stuff. And somehow he is able, they don't deal with the fringe sciences a whole lot, but the idea here is that he can ask them questions, and somehow or other, he's able to discern information because they, you know, they have a technology where they think people can absorb information through the skin or other ways. And so by asking them questions that might not even be focused on what they want to know, he's able to get the answers he needs and get the information that he needs. And, you know, they don't really focus. The episode really isn't about how he's doing it. It's just the fact that he is doing it. So I enjoy the next clip because, you know, Walter is showing more and more frustration with a lot of things, but mostly at Peter, because Peter's pretty good at pushing him. And so the next clip is kind of an interesting clip where Walter has a bit of a breakdown. And this is what you need to watch in the episode, because at the end of the clip, when he says something about root beer float, he looks so pissed why he's doing it, why he's delivering the lines. And it makes the whole scene kind of funny.
You turned on.
What is that?
Called sound.
I know that, thank you. What's the point?
I need to compare the numbers, confirm my suspicions.
Compare them to what? Suspicions of what?
Astrid Farnsworth.
I'll explain later.
No, I want you to explain right now. I want to know what the hell this tin can is.
Peter, it's Olivia.
Hello?
There's been an attack, Peter. The team at the warehouse is dead.
What? Who did it?
I don't know. We're moving that thing to a secure facility. I'm on my way.
Got it. Walter, whatever the hell that thing is, you should have never brought it here.
Why do you say this? Someone come for it.
Why would you ask that?
Have they?
Yes.
We need to keep this safe. I need something very important.
What?
Aluminum foil.
Why?
Trust me.
No, thank you.
Damn it! Must you always be such a smartass? I need the aluminum foil right now to shield the frequencies of the cylinder. Your life depends on it. All our lives depend on it. Go now!
I'm gonna go get you your aluminum foil. And then when I get back, you're gonna tell me what the hell it is you think that thing does.
While you're out, if you see a chance to get me a root beer float, that would be wonderful.
I'll see what I can do.
Would you be a lamb and get me that syringe?
Sure.
Thank you.
Now, the scene that just played out is probably one of my favorite scenes of this episode. Probably my favorite scene of this episode for a lot of different reasons. First of all, we see Walter having a little bit of a meltdown at Peter. He's just kind of irritated that he won't listen to what he's saying. Obviously, at this point, you kind of know that Walter is frustrated about something and maybe covering something up. But most importantly, one of the many, many reasons John Noble deserves an Emmy is... when Astrid hands him the syringe, you can't tell from the audio, but he ends up injecting her with some sort of sedative. Now, you can tell he's kind of upset about it, and you're like, what the heck is going on? And we will have a scene in this episode where he goes and he apologizes to Astrid. I have the clip, I have the audio, but it's not the same as watching the scene because obviously, I mean, that's a huge betrayal. They're on the same team, and, you know, how are you going to work with somebody like that? And I really wish that there was more time for them to dwell on this over the coming episodes. And they really don't, because it's got to be a hard thing. I mean, that was one of the things that was kind of unbelievable to me, you know, considering what the show's about. But the fact that, you know, if I was Astrid, I'd either ask for a transfer or because how are you going to turn your back? Because you never know what's going to happen. You know, once somebody has done a betrayal like this, it's just going to make you ultra paranoid. But, you know, Walter does have a reason behind it. He does explain it. The next clip is of Walter in a diner, finally having a root beer float. And lo and behold, he meets with the bald man.
I haven't had a root beer float.
afloat in 17 years.
And? How is it?
Heavenly. And earthly at the same time.
Quite the connoisseur.
Do you want some?
No, thank you. I wouldn't taste much anyway. Seventeen years. That's a long time to go without something you love.
Where I've been, you lose track of time. So much now to make up for.
Thank you for hiding the beacon. I can't touch it myself. I know you have questions. Soon you will have answers.
Of course.
Dr. Walter Bishop with Ford in his photo right now.
Surveillance posted outside his last home.
Come on, this is getting...
Please do not stand there and tell me that you have no idea...
You're assuming I have any understanding of how that man's addled brain works.
You gave the impression that you could handle it.
Hey, let's get something straight. I didn't promise you anything. I warned you from the word go.
Agent Dunham. Thank God. Where? We'll be right there. Walter just got picked up, walking the median of I-95.
Now, obviously, we learned some important things with the meeting that Walter had with the Observer. First of all, the fact that he was hiding the beacon. Secondly, that it's a beacon. And third, that the Observer can't touch it for some reason. Now, the next clip is, I think it's kind of self-explanatory. They have Walter in a room, and they're trying to figure out exactly what's what.
If it's possible, I would very much like my own clothes back.
Let me explain how this works to you, Walter. You can't inject a federal officer with sedative, steal government property, and then escape from protective custody, and then ask to be not treated like a criminal.
Have you never taken anything that didn't belong to you because you knew it was the right thing to do?
This isn't about me.
Maybe it is, Peter.
You took the cylinder. Do you remember that?
Yes, of course. What would you like to know about it?
Where is it?
I can't tell you that. But I can tell you that someone is coming to seek the cylinder, thus I had to hide it. And I don't recall where or from whom.
We need you to remember. It may be dangerous. We need to help keep people safe. Tell me what it is.
If I attempted to explain it, you might think me mad.
Don't worry, there's no chance of that happening.
I believe there are only another 4 hours... which I must keep the cylinder from those who are trying to get it. A theory I have discussed with my friend who agrees with me.
Your friend, he's a tall fellow, right? Pink, big fuzzy ears.
No, he's a man. Quite nice. Albeit extremely bald. No eyebrows either. It's disturbing, but you get accustomed to it.
You talk to him?
Do you really think it's a good idea to feed into his delusions at this point?
Walter, who is he? Where can we find him?
We won't be able to find him.
Of course not, because he's in the seventh dimension.
He's shy. Though he wouldn't be any use to you. He just observes.
Walter, you haven't talked to this man. You've seen him in Olivia's photographs. So cut out the gibberish and just tell us where the cylinder is.
Must you always be so small-minded? Like her, like your mother, questioning my judgment. I am not a child. I will not be babied.
Thank you for that. That's exactly what I needed. Guilt relieved. Olivia, I am very sorry, but I think you'll understand why I don't want to hang around any longer.
I upset him, didn't I?
So that was like a loaded clip there. We finally have a confrontation head-to-head with Peter and Walter. Walter brings up Peter's mother, who we haven't heard very much of. And, you know, we haven't heard very much about. And, you know, they kind of have, you know, a little battle of wills there. And Peter's finally had enough. He has a lot of reasons for leaving. I think that part of the reason for staying has always been Walter, whether he wants to admit it or not. I think that he's, you know, he's obviously has some feelings for his father, realizes that he's not a bad man, at least not now, and has been trying to, you know, do what he can to rectify that relationship. Now, you know, that is one of the ongoing things. And the thing is that the relationship between Peter and Walter really carries through the entire series of Fringe. And I don't know if I mentioned this, but Fringe came back last week for season 5. You know, we're into season 5. And, you know, had a very short hiatus over the holidays. And my DVR didn't record it. And I cannot tell you the level of anger that brings me, because people were commenting on it. And I'm like, hey, why don't I have this? Why is this not on my DVR? So I don't know what the heck happened, but kind of angry about that. I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to get that, because I really, especially with doing the episodes here, I'm really getting pumped for the finale. And I hope that I hope it's a good one. I hope it's a solid one, and we'll see where that goes. Anyway, the next clip is that, you know, what has happened is that the bad guy has got the cylinder. And he had to do the memory thing to Peter in order to get it. Peter's in kind of bad shape. Olivia goes after, they're in the middle of nowhere here, and Olivia goes after him and ends up shooting him. In the meantime, the observer comes out of nowhere, and he flips open his phone and talks to whoever he talks to. And you think that's that, except that even though Olivia and the bad guy have wandered off somewhere and the cylinder has gone back to underground, Peter's still there, and he comes after the observer, and that's where this next audio clip comes in.
Departure on schedule.
Who the hell are you? What is the cylinder?
You know what it is, don't you?
Why is it here? Why now? Who are you? Apples, bananas, rhinoceros.
I want to hold your hand.
Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
Do you really know my father? Did you talk to him this afternoon? Are you his friend?
And we learn that apparently the observers can kind of read minds. It takes them a minute to kind of sync up with Peter, and that's what that whole exchange is about. But obviously they're able to do that, and the observer is speaking Peter's thoughts at the end there. The observer escapes. You know, Peter is in really bad shape. The one guy tortured him. He was in a fight with the observer, and he gets a weapon discharged at him, you know, an energy weapon. He's kind of beat up. And apparently Walter is kind of aware of that, and so, you know, we have the next scene here, and this is, like I said, this is the scene you need to watch. Charlie Francis comes in and gets Walter out of custody. But Walter has one more thing to do, and that is he's going to go and apologize to Astrid. This is just a really good scene, and played by both characters. Like I said, you know, it's kind of a shame that in season one that, you know, Jessica Nicole does not get enough to do. But it's clear to me as the series progresses, she's quite the actress. And she, during this scene, she's just as hard as she can, she's trying to ignore him and write something out at her desk. But this is just a great scene. And again, you know, when John Noble's delivering his lines as Walter Bishop, you can just see the sorrow in his eyes that he had to do what he had to do to Astrid in order to carry out what he thought was a plan for the greater good.
Peter, is he all right?
He's fine. He had a mild concussion, but he's going to be fine.
Thank you. That's wonderful news.
Come on. I'll take you back to your hotel.
If you don't mind, there's something I'd like to do first. What I did to you was very untrustworthy of me. I never intended to harm you. I was simply doing what was necessary to protect us all. If it would help you feel a sense of retribution, I would tell you to inject me too. But I'd most likely enjoy it.
So I think that's like one of my favorite moments of the episode. I just can't explain it. I just feel that that makes for an interesting character connection, and I really wish that they would have had more time in order to develop that. You know, the fact that Walter, you know, broke her trust, and I wish that they had more time with that. But obviously, with the show. You know, you had to kind of, you know, they're trying to move forward. You know, we're still doing these episodes that are extra long as it is because they had limited commercial interruptions. I mean, most of these episodes are around 52 minutes and or 50 minutes, something like that. Anyway, the next clip is of Olivia going to the hospital, and she has a she talks to Broyles, and she's there to check on Peter and pick him up and whatnot.
Hi.
Are you okay?
Yeah. I'm fine. So did we recover your cylinder?
We dug out the hole, but there's no sign of it. As soon as the sun comes up, we'll bring in an excavator, but somehow I don't have an expectation that we'll find it.
So it just disappeared?
We ID'd the shooter, John Mosley, wanted for a double homicide in Seattle last month. A few drug-related felonies before that.
Seattle. Came a long way to try and get that thing.
Another in a long line of questions.
Hi. You ready to get out of here?
Something happened out there tonight, Olivia. The pattern that Broyles refers to. I always thought it was nonsense. Inexplicable things happen every single day. It does not mean that there is any deeper significance. I know this is going to sound insane. I mean, I know that it sounds insane, but the man in the woods, he knew me. And I don't know how, but he was inside my head. He knew what I was going to say before I said it.
The man I shot?
No, the other guy, the bald guy. From your photos, Mr. Nobrows.
Peter, I didn't see anyone.
You know me well enough not to know that these are the last words I would ever expect to be saying, but what if Walter is right? What if this is just the beginning?
Listen, you took a pretty bad blow to the head.
You think I did this to myself?
No, I was wrong to demand that you stay here. Walter is not your responsibility. As you've always said, this was just supposed to be temporary. You have your life.
Olivia, did you hear what I just said? I mean, I'm a fairly open-minded guy, but there are things happening here that I can't even begin to explain. And I am not going anywhere until I can.
In that case, you might want this. Your credentials have been approved. Civilian consultant to the Department of Homeland Security.
Does this mean I don't need an escort to come into the federal building anymore? Will it get me out of speeding tickets?
Maybe.
Now, that seems like a valid reason for Peter staying, but when you watch this episode and you, I've got to say that just fantastic character development, not only by the writers, okay, but also Joshua Jackson, who plays Peter Bishop, just does a fantastic job with this character. You know, I know that when this show started, everybody was kind of ragging because they're like, you know, Dawson's Creek, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's got to start somewhere, right? And, you know, the first episode was just, you know, his character was just kind of okay. But I got to say that this is only the fourth episode. And already, his character has grown in leaps and bounds. And the way that I'm watching this exchange between him and Olivia, between him and his father, and watching him and the information we get in this episode, you know, he wants to stay. He's looking for a reason to stay. You know, it seems as though he's kind of been, you know, maybe I'm reading too much into this. I don't know. Hey, Fringe fans out there, feel free to send me, you know, emails or I prefer voicemails, but I'll do whatever. And send me your feedback of what you think. You know, am I wrong? Do you have a different opinion? Do you, you know, is there something to prove that I'm wrong? Or is there something that, you know, something else I'm missing? You know, give me your thoughts, etc. You know, I'm open to all this, you know, as far as the characters are concerned, but it seems to me as though Peter is looking for a reason to stay, and that, you know, he seems like he's been a runner his whole life, and, you know, he's blamed his father for that, and now he doesn't have that anymore, and, you know, there's a reason for him to stick around, not only because of his father, but because the work is important. He wants to see it to an end. Now, the final clip, yeah, finally, we're at the end, right? This review lasts longer than the episode. The final clip is a pretty big reveal. And I'm just going to go ahead and play it and then comment afterwards.
Let me tell you about my day, Walter. I was abducted, tortured. I had two wires shoved up my nose that were connected to a machine I'd never seen before. But maybe the strangest part of the day is that somehow, without talking, I was able to answer a question that I didn't have the answer to.
Where I buried the capsule?
How did I know that, Walter? I didn't know that. I didn't know where the cylinder was buried.
You know it, son, because I know it.
No, I didn't know because you didn't tell me.
I didn't have to. You must adjust the way you consider communications. Ideas. Ideas can be absorbed through osmosis, through proximity. You remember the night, the accident when you were young? I was driving.
Of course I remember.
Your mother was at home.
Of course I remember. Thanksgiving dinner.
She was anxious for us to get there, join everyone. When the car went off the road, the ice was so thick that it held the vehicle for what must have been 2 minutes.
What does this have to do with what happened today?
I regained consciousness. I saw your body contorted horribly. I reached for you, but the ice broke, and we sank into that dark water.
And then you swam to shore and saved us both. I know.
No. I was unable to control my limbs in that icy water. They wouldn't respond. I was incapable of saving you or myself. We were dead, Peter, you and I. Until someone grabbed me, and we were going up. We were saved, both of us, by a man that I had never met. A man that shouldn't have been there at all. He pulled us to the shore. I remember that he was bald, that he had no eyebrows. And as he set us down in the snow, I recall his stare. Standing there in his suit, soaking wet, seemingly indifferent to the cold. It was as if he knew my thoughts before I did. As if he were inside my head. Without speaking, he made it clear that he would need me one day. A return favor, so to speak. This is it. Today, what happened with the capsule? I'm not sure how I knew about the vibrations, the composition. But then when I tested it myself, heard the vibrations, felt them, it was as if an envelope had been opened and I could finally read my instructions. Instantly, I knew I had to protect the capsule. For him. Who they are, what they want. As a man of science, I share your frustration in not having these answers. But what I know is that you are sitting here now, my son, alive. I know. you must think me insane.
Not nearly as much as you might think.
So I think that it probably kind of changes their dynamic when you realize that Walter has done all these things, you know, which are crimes. And you know, he has done this because basically of Peter, because he owed the guy one, right? Because he saved Peter's life and saved his life. And I thought that that was, you know, that last clip is a big deal, okay? I'll just say that right now. Those of you who are watching Fringe for the first time, you know, you really can't skip an episode, okay? I mean, you really can't. Actually, no, there's one episode you can skip, and it comes up in season two, and it's my least favorite episode. I know some people probably like it. I hated it. Probably it's the only episode of Fringe I didn't really like. Anyway, you know, I know a few diggers are either watching Fringe for the first time or rewatching it as I do these reviews. And hopefully, you know, people are kind of hanging with me. If you're like me, I like listening to podcasts of shows, you know, about shows that I've already seen. I like, you know, it's some, you know, a way for me to kind of, you know, relive it in a lot of ways, you know, re-enjoy it. But, you know, I was talking to, you know, one of the diggers, and they were saying how they had missed so much. That, you know, they watched the episode and apparently they weren't paying attention because there was just so much that they had missed. And that is one of the things with Fringe, just one of those shows where you can't be doing something else. You need to focus on what's going on. You're going to miss something. It's not a bubblegum show where you can sit back and just kind of let it flow. And all these little things are important that are happening, and they're all going to play out in a much bigger manner. That's why I had a little, you know, geek episode when I started talking about this, about how this is the perfect show for sci-fi dig because of everything, and for sci-fi fans everywhere, because you have the science, you have the fact that it's set in the real world, you have the science aspect, you have the fringe science, which is the science fiction aspect, and you have all the clues and the hints and all little things going on in the show. And I know a lot of people didn't give this show a chance. You know, I'm sure, you know, I clearly remember when I watched the first couple episodes how, you know, it was okay. And I'm pretty sure I talked about the podcast. It's like, it's okay, but it's not really grabbing me. It seems a lot like an X-Files knockoff. And it does seem like that until you start hitting the later seasons and realize it's much, much bigger. And it's much bigger and much smaller in a lot of ways. Okay. It's much bigger because everything is interconnected. It's much smaller because everything is interconnected, right? It's not, you know, they have all these little fringe cases here and there, but it's all connected to the other universe, to Massive Dynamic, to all these things. They're all interconnected, and it all plays out. And like I said, you know, I start doing this not knowing how the final season and how the series is going to end, and I sure hope that it ends on a very solid high note. And it must be I can't say a high note, just a very solid ending is what I'm looking for. You know, you can, you know, I know some people like happy endings, but, you know, actually the characters of Fringe could die at the end of season 5. And I would be okay with that as long as it all made sense. And, you know, we got to tell, I'm not one of those people that think, we need to bring the show back. They had 5 seasons. They told their stories. And so far it's been a fantastic ride. And that's what I wanted to continue. I'd rather Fringe go out on a high note than get beat to death like X-Files or Supernatural, where they're just milking it for the money, and any kind of semblance of storytelling is just falling apart. And, you know, still watch Supernatural, and, you know, every now and then there's an episode I enjoy, but it's not anything like the first 5 seasons. As far as I'm concerned, Supernatural ended at, you know, season 5. That was the finale. That's what I needed, and that's what made sense for me. Anyway, so that was the Fringe episode of The Arrival. This is season 1, episode 4. I'm trying to find out if there's any other Easter eggs for upcoming episodes, and I am coming up kind of, I know, I'm lying. There is an Easter egg. Man, how do they find these things? The opening scene, you know, when they have the titles floating around in the street, there's one that says they're in Brooklyn, New York. And my God, and if you have a bionic eye, you can look through the O in New York, and there was a signpost behind there, and there's a poster on it. I'm sorry, a lamppost, and there's a poster on it that says, "Find your hidden potential." And the next episode is Power Hungry, and that plays into that a little bit. So that's, man, I don't, like I'm talking about, like those little clues, it's really fun that they're there. I'm never going to find those without help. I'm just happy I can spot the bald man in the episodes, all right? But I'm never going to find those other clues. I mean, they're very, very hard to see. So far of the episodes, of the four episodes I've talked about, the only one that I noticed was the one-way street sign that said something. I still didn't understand what it meant for the last episode or something. And that kind of made, you know, I spotted that. I knew it was one of the clues, didn't know what it meant, but I knew that it was one of the clues, but nothing else I've gotten. Been very tough. Anyway, I'm going to wind this up. So that was Fringe season 1, episode 4, The Arrival. I want to hear from you. Let me know what you thought, think about Fringe. You know, I'm on all the social networks I'm on. You know, you guys can send me audio files. You can call the comment line, all that stuff. I want to hear from you. Let me know if you're watching the show. Let me know what you think. You know, I'm going to do all of season 1 without a doubt. I want to do the entire series, but we're going to see what people think. You need to let me know. Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you not want me to do it? What do you want? Do you want to talk about the show? Do you want to have, I mean, you have to give me the feedback. Otherwise, I won't know. Anyway, that's it. Well, folks, that is the show. I will talk to everybody next time. And, you know, I'm still having some time issues. I just like to forewarn people that if I don't stay weekly, you're going to get at least 2 times a month. Yeah, I'll go every other week if I have to. But I'm trying to stay on top of my game, trying to pull as much audio as possible. But, man, I just, things have been getting busier and busier at work, and I'm kind of struggling here. And what I hate is when I start to run out of time, I start to rush. And then I rush through it, and then I'm not happy with the episode, and then either I end up deleting the whole thing, which just puts me even further behind, or I post and then I'm miserable for a couple of days because I feel it's just not my best work. So, I mean, not that, you know, Sci-Fi Dig is going to win any awards anytime soon or anything, but it is fun, and I love the community, and I love the talking back and forth, and I love sci-fi, damn it. I just love it. I can't help it. Anyway, I will talk to everybody next time. This is Aaron for the Sci-Fi Dig podcast. Over and out.